Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Here we are at Scream Therapy Podcast episode 90.5, a recap of the past 10 conversations I've had with people who linked their involvement in the punk scene with their mental health and the mental health of others. With each of these conversations, I learn more and more about how to maintain stability while living with mental health conditions that I have to manage every day. Like the peer-led support groups I'm part of, talking to other punks about their experiences has been instrumental in my health. My hope is that you, the listener, will find inspiration and feel supported by the stories in these episodes. Here's what happened in episodes 81 to 90. On episode 81, Bron Guillaume Leon of Just Friends joined me to talk about embracing a wide range of emotions through her band's music. Bron explained how using sadness, anger, and of course, happiness and celebration helps her to be a whole person.
Being able to express those sides of myself, I don't want to say they're bigger contributions to my mental health, but being unable to express yourself as an entire person is stifling. And if you can't get rid of those feelings some way, you know, either screaming in your car along to a song, or you can't heal if you don't let those things out and if you don't acknowledge those parts of yourself and if you can't see yourself with grace, you know, when you're angry or when you've made a mistake or when you're hateful or jealous. If you're too ashamed to acknowledge these parts of yourself, they're gonna fester and eventually like take over, because now you have this guilt and you feel like you're not worthy or you're anything but human.
Andrew White of Garrison and the Portland DBT Institute joined me on episode 82 to discuss a form of therapy that has a lot in common with the ethos of punk rock. Andrew has devoted his career to dialectical behavior therapy because of its non-hierarchical approach and a focus on self-regulating skills.
I think of DBT as a basket of all of these practices that are put together. And the basket has two purposes. The basket is meant so a patient can take the skills and make them their own and not be reliant on a clinician. There's a skills workbook I actually have next to me on my desk here where people can figure out, like, what do I need to do right now to stop my suffering from happening so things are better for me? The basket also helps therapists to stay on point and to follow a set of principles. We have really good data and we know how humans control or regulate their emotions. And there's a way to do it. So we're going to teach you what to do about your emotions, kind of like saying it's the missing owner's manual for your emotions.
On 83, Seb Alvarez, vocalist for Meth and a concert promoter based in Chicago, talked to me about his recent bipolar diagnosis and how it's changed his outlook towards music and life. Seth explained the validation he's found in being able to put a name to his condition and take steps to stabilize his mental health.
My parents both called me and my partner, and I screened their calls the first day, but I was just like, just tell them I'm fine. Like, I'll call them when I'm ready. And it just took me a while to kind of come to terms with it, and then just kind of adapting and just jumped into the group therapies. And I just wanted to know, I guess, what, I don't even want to say like what was wrong with me, but just like what I was feeling at that time.
Patty Farr, a psychotherapist from Eugene, Oregon, guested on episode 84. Patty is the creator of LCBH Punk, a punk band formed at a mental health clinic with its outpatients as the musicians. The band is used to express concerns with the mental health system and forge community amongst its members.
The clinic in late capitalism, people are very much atomized. They're like made to be individuals and separated from each other. People really don't have power. They're not able to like make changes. They're not able to like make demands. By creating like a medium like this, on the one level, it brings together people who are in the band who are playing music and writing. And then it starts attracting other people into the band from outside who may not play music, who may never have written a song, who are coming to write songs or coming just to like share their own experiences. The most important changes, I think, are social. The whole thing about disability is that disability is really like a social condition. The society we live in is disabling.
Just as I finished episode 85, it was brought to my attention that my originally scheduled guest was harboring a sexual predator. His bandmate had been accused by multiple women of sexual assault and abuse. I stand with these survivors and I pulled the episode. Instead, I re-released an episode with Rosie Richeson, former screamer in Nightwitch, a hardcore punk band from Tallahassee, Florida. In our discussion, Rosie addressed the problem with sexual predators in the punk scene.
So I finally told my story. I was groped at a venue we all love during an event we all love. And people came up to me afterwards and were like, I'm so sorry that happened to you, but you should just kind of expect to get groped. You're a girl at a show. That's just what happens to girls. Come on. And I was like, wait, what? You know, a 20-year-old just being like, wait, what? That's just one incident that happened, right? There were plenty of other incidents that contributed to the way I like viewed punk. I've definitely spoken out on it. And because of that, a lot of people, and because of my background in mental health, a lot of people have come to me to kind of resolve specific issues with specific people.
The Real episode 85 featured Mean Bikini vocalist Millie Lyman to talk about their life with Tourette's, an often misunderstood neurological condition. Millie explained the physical and vocal tics they have dealt with their whole life, as well as attention deficit hyperactivity, and how both conditions have given them the opportunity to be their authentic selves.
The formal description of what Tourette's is it's a neurological disorder, so it works in your nervous system, and basically it causes you to make involuntary movements and sounds, which are referred to as tics. Tourette's is definitely like a spectrum. There's other tic disorders. Someone, typically a child, would develop like a weird tic. I know lots of people that I've met in my life have had tics, but not a diagnosis of Tourette's, meaning that typically it won't be persisting for a super long period of time. I really love the opportunity to talk about this stuff because there's so many misconceptions about it through the media. I've had people straight up, when I've told them I have Tourette's, be like, no, you don't. And I'm like, do you want to see my paperwork? I don't carry it on me, but...
Joseph Lekas of Palm Ghosts guested on episode 86. Joseph reflected on how his work in the music business causes anxiety to skyrocket into panic attacks and social anxiety. After recuperating from a horrible bout of depression, Joseph was able to return to creating and recording his own music, a much-needed form of therapy.
Once this festival ended and I had a lot of time on my hands, I just lost it. This second festival was starting to begin. I didn't want to go to some of the events. I kind of we had a big outdoor event with like 10 bands all day long as part of this. I remember sitting on my car on Girard Avenue in Philly, just sitting there for an hour, shaking and not wanting to go talk to people. As soon as I came onto the grounds and people came up to me and asked me questions, I like disappeared into the bathroom and I would have just full-on panic attacks. I didn't know they were panic attacks. I thought I was dying again of some sort of cardiovascular disease, something. It was just a perfect storm of substances all the time and no sleep, and I would smoke two packs of cigarettes. I couldn't take it anymore. So every time I'd go into public, I'd have to run to a bathroom and like splash my face with cold water.
Missouri addictions counselor and solo punk musician Kelly Betts guested on episode 88. Kelly talked about his own drug and alcohol misuse and how he was able to get and stay sober. Kelly's work with youth and adults with addiction issues has been from a place of lived experience and through a punk ethics lens.
It's a difficult journey. And when it was time for me to get sober, I realized that either path I went down, continuing to drink was going to be bad, and getting sober was going to be bad, but I was going to do the one that was good for me. And so this idea of there being a reason to function ethically and to function to the best of my ability, and honestly, to be something. Just, I can be something. Life is worth it is something that I take away from punk. Even though there is so much negativity, I think that's ultimately what it is this fight against that negativity. So it really helped to go in having lived all these punk experiences that were difficult. It's a difficult path that I took. It wasn't comfortable. So when it was time to be uncomfortable and to struggle and to prove how tough I was, that is what pushed me through that time of those first years being sober.
Episode 87 featured Tim Andrell of Sweet Cheetah PR and Records. Tim talked about helping folks in the punk scene promote their music and projects in exchange for volunteer work and donations. Instead of charging his friends for PR work, Tim volunteers his time in his pay it forward style punk endeavor.
Rather than send people a bill for my work, I ask them to find a charitable organization that they're passionate about, and then to determine what kind of a contribution they'd like to make to that organization. And I've seen those contributions be really small and powerful, as well as really large. I've seen bands be able to make a monetary donation of a couple thousand dollars to a charity organization. I've also seen folks who didn't have a tremendous amount of monetary resources available to them say, well, maybe I could write letters to kids at St. Jude's who are going through an experience and offer them encouragement. Neither one of those is more important to me.
On episode 89, my guest was Elijah Scarpati, a self-proclaimed trans slut rock duo, Jennifer. Elijah talked about how transitioning affected his mental health in positive ways through the validation of identity, but also presented a new set of challenges, both internally and externally.
Transitioning just is a confrontation with a very, very deep part of yourself, and one that anyone, I think, has the capacity for. However you identify and however you feel in your lifetime or anything, like, I think it is something that we all have. It's just a part of self. We all have multiple things in us and whatever, different energies. And I guess transitioning, it kind of relieved some of the pressure, because I think just the way that honesty and clarity kind of always relieves some pressure and gives you this feeling of relief that you're in line with yourself, maybe. But also, I think the closer that you look into your own psyche, the more complications there are, just because we're like really complex creatures. And I think it's like, it's just like turmoil to exist. And transitioning is all about really, really looking at existence from like every single lens.
Finally, on episode 90, I welcomed Chris Broach of Braid. Chris talked about how his undiagnosed ADHD was one of the main reasons his band broke up in 99. Now that Chris has been diagnosed with ADHD, he realizes what his behavior meant and how it affected his life.
I didn't know I had problems, right? A lot of people around me knew I had problems, and they would tell me, something's wrong with you, or why are you like this, or I think you're an alcoholic and I'm going to stop playing in this band with you because of it. This kind of stuff happened a lot. And I blamed everyone else. Oh, they don't have it or whatever. And then Braid sort of ended. We were touring nonstop in 1998. And I was a dick all the time. Everybody annoyed me all the time. And people still annoy me all the time. But I didn't realize that that was because I was unable to focus.
I encourage you to go back and listen to these full episodes and many more at screentherapyhq.com. I recently kicked off Susan Wilmot's Along the Way book club with a reading from the Scream Therapy book, Scream Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health. Here are some clips from the reading.
Punk rock saved my life. My face leaked tears when I first heard those words come out of someone else's mouth. It happened during my very first interview for this book and the Scream Therapy podcast. My tears were happy tears, tears of validation, the kind of tears you let run down your face without wiping them away, because you want them there. I wanted them there. Punk rock saved my life too. As a youth, somewhere in my gut, I knew a safe place was out there where I could be me. In the punk scene, I found my chosen family. Our throats screamed raw, sinew and muscle tossed around with wild abandon. Embodied bodies in unison, individuality is a common cause. Punk rock isn't a music genre, it's a way of being. For as many years as I've been alive, gritty, outspoken, inspiring bands have led the charge for wellness. The punk scene has created a shelter with a welcome sign on its front doors, and those who make themselves at home find solace. Punk and mental health have always been connected. Songs about personal struggle have been yelled into dented microphones and launched out of beat-up instruments since the genre's formation in the mid-70s. Punk pioneers such as the Ramones, X-Ray Specs, Husker Du, DOA, Minutemen, and so many more challenged conventions, carved out a do-it-yourself ethos for punk scenes worldwide, and tackled the taboo subject of mental health without shame. It took me more than 3 decades to face it within myself. The effect punk has on those who embrace it, as it embraces them, is immeasurable. Take it from me. Punk rescued me from rotting in a mill town and pulled me towards the city, where underground bands played their hearts out in unlicensed venues, with sweat dripping down the walls. Punk expanded my limited perception of the world. In my small town, I had to pretend to fit in. And in the city, going to shows with outcasts in band t-shirts and ripped jeans was downright communal. On October 12, 2018, I made an emergency trip to the hospital where a psychiatrist gave me a diagnosis of bipolar, a foreign word I barely recognized. As a lifelong punk, I was a storied veteran. To a health crisis, I was a hapless rookie. Since my diagnosis, other punks have shared their lived experiences with me, and through theirs, I pieced together my own. Punk rock saved my life. Members of the punk scene repeat this mantra again and again, and it's hardly a coincidence. From its unflinching inception, punk rock, for me, for us, has always been scream therapy. When they hunt me down, I'm still pulsing with psychosis. My sister, a psych nurse, fast-tracks me to a psychiatrist. The whoosh of the hospital doors behind me sounds like a skateboard, whizzing by on smooth pavement, speed wobbling my electric head. I'm getting out of here someday, right? My joke doesn't land with Meg and my mom. Their faces look as if I'm going to bolt into the forest behind the hospital. I'm led into the waiting room where I squirm in an ass-numbing chair and juggle a hornet's nest of racing thoughts. I'm clenching my phone so tight it's a wonder the screen doesn't crack. The psychiatrist calls me into her office and it takes less than 15 minutes. No tests, no family history, no checklist, no debrief, no soft landing. Jason, you have bipolar disorder. I'm not well versed in these words. I ask questions and can't comprehend the answers. My entourage is in the office now and I look over at their blood-drained faces, my support system, my team, safe people. We have more questions. My mom has the first one. Are you sure? I've seen thousands of patients and I have no doubt this is bipolar, says the psychiatrist. It's the people who are depressed that we have a hard time diagnosing. When they're manic, like Jason is right now, it's very easy. The psychiatrist turns her focus to me. I'm going to prescribe you a mood stabilizer for the mania, she says, and an antipsychotic so you can sleep, okay? The pounding behind my eye socket subsides a little as she explains what comes next. Medication and sleep are the most immediate necessities for the long, hard road ahead. My lungs beg me to take my first deep belly breath of the past few days as skullfuckery. Now it's my mom's turn to squirm in her chair. The look on her face reminds me of the time when a doctor tweezed sweater fragments out of the crook of my 6-year-old arm. A summer camping trip cut short by hyperactivity, scalding hot chocolate, and a night in the hospital. It's going to be okay, she said, through tears as she pinned me down on the emergency room table. Jason, can I ask you something? She's talking real words, here, now. Sure, what? Will you give me your phone? My 19-day descent into psychosis jumped between a reality and an online world that wasn't the real world, but was sort of the real world, but really wasn't. Okay, you can have it, I said. A thought sparks, am I free? At home, the medication brings me down for the mania, but I'm jonesing to post status updates about my diagnosis. Facebook remains the dark angel on my shoulder, goading me to search for instant gratification in well wishes and you're so braves. I read online that a psychotic break is like a head injury and the helmet fits, so I'm stuck wearing it. I collapse into the couch, hit shuffle on my iTunes library, and open the floodgates on loud music to dull my pain. I leave the house for disorientating walks, and the music soldiers on. supplying a cacophonous entrance song as I come back through the front door. Couchbound again, blunt force trauma flattens me. Medication rescues me from the danger zone, but my moods ping-pong in a vicious cycle. Depression suspends me upside down in its torturous compression chamber, but I wriggle loose and bust out like a manic Houdini on steroids, my mind flooded with impossible magic. A week later, I'm depressed again. 2 weeks after that, manic. I'm a superhero, I'm a drowned corpse. I'm a superhero, I'm a drowned corpse. To a signature soundtrack of punk and metal, my superhero, name and powers to be decided, is back and hatching grandiose, elaborate plans, while runaway telephone wires swing towards my cerebral cortex. I can write a book and do a podcast while I'm recuperating. I scribble the words scream therapy in a notebook, and the words podcast and book, and then try, and they sit there for over a year while I pare down a tangled mess of other ideas. The medication isn't keeping my mania and depression at bay, so my psychiatrist ups my dose for the cloud-hopping highs and adds an antidepressant to the mix for the bottom-scraping lows. Skull-crusher vice grip headaches take me down for the count. Meds up, meds down, old meds, new meds. I'm trapped on a mood-cycling hell ride. I want to die. Please let me die. Something in her clicked, smacks off Amanda Filippelli's tongue like the snap on a leather handbag. Amanda worked in the mental health care system for 10 years, teaching adolescent trauma survivors how to find empowerment in their stories. These days, she's an author, editor, and book coach who teaches connection and healing through storytelling. As a teen, Amanda spent her formative years in Pittsburgh's punk scene and found its positivity inspiring. She, in turn, became an inspiration to others when she started working as a counselor at residential treatment facilities for youth. In her work, Amanda leaned into her punk upbringing to further her clients' therapeutic goals. One afternoon, she was driving a girl who was living in a group home to an appointment and saw an opening. This girl was difficult to get through to, Amanda says. She'd been at the facility for a long time and struggled with addiction and self-harm. Amanda squares her shoulders. She tells me she also harmed herself as a youth. What clicked for Amanda's passenger was a song Amanda played on the stereo, The Young Crazed Peeling by The Distillers, a Los Angeles punk band fronted by the sneering, charismatic Brody Dahl. It was one of Amanda's favorites as she struggled through high school and teenhood and the pecking order at her schools. Amanda tells me the girl perked up as soon as the song's lyrics burst from the speakers. Are you ready to be liberated on this sad side city street? Well, the birds have been freed from their cages. I got freedom and my youth. One of the songs that protected Amanda from high school bullshit was now a pay it forward to a new generation, another punk circle completed. It made the girl understand it's okay to take this music and use it as an opportunity to lash out and express yourself instead of lashing out against yourself. And it changed something in her, Amanda says. Noting the girl's improvement, Amanda decided to incorporate punk rock and other music into her therapy sessions with youth. Most were stuck in a broken system, cycling in and out of mental health facilities, and the music opened them up, she says. So many of the things they were feeling, the frustrations, the anger, the sadness, the problems of self-image, even symptoms and hair diagnoses, were things I knew the music could help them express, she says. Eventually, staff allowed the girl to go off grounds and take part in field trips because of good behavior. Whenever Amanda drove the girl around, loud bands were their soundtrack. She always wanted to rock out in the car, she tells me with a blooming smile. It was a healing experience for both of us. Living with a mental health condition is an ever-evolving learning experience. It's not enough that the journey is always changing, so is the language around it. I've been reflecting on something mental health activist Sasha DeBruyl told me, words that in retrospect have altered my life. In the days, weeks, months, and years following my diagnosis, when crossed wires between my mind and body threatened to snap under the weight of my history, my goal had been to recover. I wanted to punch bipolar in the face. I needed to overcome it, to win. Recovery meant getting better. It was my light, my way out. But the fear of living with bipolar for the rest of my life and the terrifying possibility of relapsing into another manic episode kept me from looking at the full scope of my mental health, the long game. One that didn't require a claim to swift victory, but instead a steady eventual recognition of stability. 2 years my junior, Sasha also lives as bipolar and has been stable for more than a decade. He's one of a growing number of mental health advocates moving away from the language of recovery. Honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of the language of recovery. So what am I recovering from? Am I recovering and going back to the way I was before? Because that certainly is not the case, Sasha told me. A low watt light bulb hung over me as I stared at Sasha with a glimmer of understanding. Wait, I don't want to recover. To go back to the way I was before, the damage I was doing? The next words out of Sasha's mouth screwed a new megawatt bulb into my socket, creating a luminescent aha I'm still humming from. Transformation. I like to use the language of transformation, he said. I'm not interested in a mental health recovery movement. I'm way more interested in a mental health transformation movement. My thought pistons fired. Transformation movement. Through and out, not back. You don't look at a caterpillar that forms a chrysalis and say, oh, that caterpillar is in a state of recovery, Sasha said. And a chrysalis doesn't just stay a chrysalis, it becomes a butterfly. My jaw loosened and words dropped out. Do you feel like a butterfly? He paused for an awkwardly long time. Yeah, sometimes. The issue with the metaphor, he explained, is that we don't stay a butterfly either. It's a spectrum. I have different stages of evolution and transformation, he told me. No way have I ever felt like the word recovery captures what I went through, because each time I went through one of those experiences, I learned so much and I gained so much. Shortly after my diagnosis, I veered away from distorted and pathologized language, such as mental illness, towards person-first language like living with a mental health condition. One thing that never occurred to me before talking to Sasha is we can also challenge the term mental health. We call it mental health, he told me, but it's actually just liberation, individual and collective liberation. The Icarus Project, a social justice group Sasha co-founded in 2002, proposes that a person's mental state benefits from collective liberation. Sasha told me he prefers to look at mental states as sensitivities and dangerous gifts. Rather than seeing ourselves as diseased or disordered, we see ourselves as having wings that we have to learn to use, Sasha said. I really don't like talking about illness or disease or disorder or dysfunction. I want to leave space open for people to figure out for themselves what it is they're struggling with. When I got my ass locked up in a psych hospital when I was 18 and they told me I had a biological brain disease, I was so embedded in punk rock and anarchism, I said, fuck you people. Then Sasha busted out the lyrics to Suicidal Tendencies Institutionalized, a screw you to involuntary hospitalization. What are you trying to say? I'm crazy? When I went to your schools, I went to your churches, I went to your institutional learning facilities. So how can you say I'm crazy? Sasha moved on from the Icarus Project in 2014 and started Transformative Mental Health Practices, where he helps people who want to use their mad gifts to better themselves. Before we ended our lengthy call, Sasha left me one critical point to ponder. What if we flip mental illness around and said, actually, the society we're living in is really sick, he said. Its foundations are based on genocide and slavery. Instead of just fitting into ourselves into a society that's really broken, what if we use the fact that we're different from the society to try to change society? A content look washed over Sasha's face as he left me with simple yet life-defining words. I got that outlook from punk rock.
For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, a punk that tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well. If you don't, you could lose your-